ወጣት ድሮ ጀም ቴክ ይገፋላን ይችላል Someone was saying to me that if you want to get him lunch, and then after lunch he does not speak too much. Chedi, are we fine?
I'm fine.
Yes. Can we go to this page 12 line? No.
Page 12 line 7.
Yeah, page 12 line 7. We shouldn't just lead us on that one. Just a matter of course. Can you lead us on that proposal?
Thanks, Chair. It actually relates to, on page 14 from line 24, it suggested that you move subsection 3 to 4 under clause 21 and make that 21.6, as that relates to the classification in films and games. And that has a second component that the NCOP has proposed that in that subsection 3 you delete the words subject to section 24A, 2 and 3. This proposal came from the state law advisor, so I just asked him to lead that proposal to.
Okay.
Chairperson, thank you. Before the state law advisors, we've also had a discussion on this. It was something that was proposed by the state law advisors. The issue of deleting the words subject to section 24A, 2 and 3. Section 24A, 2 and 3 relates to your offence provisions. Now, our argument is that we are not regulating the content of broadcasters. What we are doing is saying that should you broadcast something, in specific instance, that has already been classified as a XX or X18, whatever the case may be, refused classification, then you forfeit of the provisions of the criminal provisions, your offence provisions of the Act. Because you sit with a situation where ETV, for instance, will be able, in terms of this, if you take that out, to broadcast something that has been classified XX or X18, etc. But Sterkinikor, if they do that, they're subject to the criminal or the offence provisions in the Act. And it's a question of, yes, it's got to do with independence and ICASA, etc., but, you know, it needs to cut across the board. If I murder somebody, I'm also subject to the laws of the country. And maybe it's not the right example to use, but in the same vein, I would say if you're going to contravene a provision and you're able to broadcast something that's clearly XX or X18, you should also be subject to the criminal provision or offence provisions of the Act. We are not regulating the content of broadcasting. We're just saying if you do this, you are subject to the criminal provisions. And then the police takes over. It's a criminal offense. It's not the Home Affairs or whatever. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Pastor. Thank you, Sir Pastor. Yes, indeed. The amendment was proposed as a result of the submission that was made in the Select Committee. But also the only thing that we've acted on, the issue was raised as a constitutional issue raised by the advocate, which was appointed by the Select Committee, and then we had to comment on that amendment and then on the issues raised. So what I can say on this committee is our argument was Section 192 of the Constitution, which says it's only national legislation must enact a legislation that will regulate ICASA. It must establish a body that will regulate the broadcasting in the public interest. So we might, I want to put it on record before this committee, we might have read Section 192 out of context. Because after we've looked into the issue again in preparation for this committee, we've carefully looked at it, we've read it, we've analyzed the provision, the section, and we came to the conclusion that the section, as it stands, is not regulating ICASA. It does not regulate broadcasting, does not regulate the content. So this is our position before this committee. The removal of the word subject to chairperson, because we said if you remove those words, if you leave those words in, that will mean you granted the exemption, you make it partial, the exemption, then you should be removed as well. But then if you remove those words, now it's going to give the impression to the broadcasters to mean that even though, yes, they are exempted from the application of the Act, and also that section, the one that deals with the offences and penalties, it must give them the impression to mean it's not applicable to them. So our emphasis is we can leave the amendment as it is, as proposed. But on this amendment, we just add back the word subject to section 24A, 2, and 3. That's the only thing we can add on this amendment. But they should stay, because the other thing that we've done is to reposition the subsection. We've removed it from section 27, from section 23, as a subsection 3, because we thought it's not, it doesn't read well. It does not link with what we have there. The subject matter is different. So it's not correctly positioned where it's put in the Act, in the bill, which is the committee, the portfolio committee bill. So we propose that it should be removed. Hence we have in the amendment, hence we have under clause 27, you say on page 14 from line 24 to omit subsection 3. Yes, we're omitting that subsection, but we're putting it now under section 18. Section 18 is the one that deals with the classification of films and publication. And then we thought that it's where it should be. It should be placed there. But the only thing we did, we did not remove it as it is from section 23, as it is from the bill. We remove it and put it there, but also we removed the word subject too. So the only thing we're saying before you, we can put back the word subject to section 24A, 2 and 3, because if you remove those words, it might give that impression. And also section 24A, if we look at section 24A, section 24A, I agree with Dion. It's a law, it's just a general section. It deals with offences and penalties. It applies to everyone. It also applies to the broadcasters. That's what we want to do. If you put back those words, it tells them that even though you are exempted from the duty to apply for classification, even though you are exempted from the content of the Act, that doesn't necessarily mean the provisions provided for under the section 24A, which is offences and penalties, it doesn't necessarily mean you are not you are exempted from those provisions, because those are the criminal offences. It applies to everyone. Thank you, Chairperson.
Agreed. I concur. The words go back. That's what you said. The words go back. Subject.
Just to give some context, if you look at section 192, it says there must be an independent, legislation must establish an independent regulator to regulate broadcasting in the public interest. That's section 192. Now, if you have a situation where, let's leave out ETV sexual content, let's look at political content. If you have a Films and Publications Board which can refuse a publication as refused, on maybe on the grounds of propaganda for violence or incitement of racial hatred or something like that, it's going to be regulating the content of broadcasting while it's not independent. And there are a number of constitutional court cases which say that determine what is independent. And all of these cases have been lost. In the certification judgment, the constitutional court held that factors that may be relevant to establish independence depends on the nature of the institution concerned, and includes governing appointments, tenure, removal, as well as those concerning institutional independence. Then there was the first constitutional court case, Van Rooyen versus and others versus S. It essentially had that they reiterated these factors on the appointment procedure. So, for example, whereas ICASA is appointed by the President on the recommendation of Parliament, their tenure is not linked to that of the department, of the minister. The minister can't hire and fire them. There's certain criteria. And if you look now, for example, the issue with independence is going to be a real problem, because as you see, the Films and Publications Board is representing the minister. In no way can it be said to be an independent body. And looking at all these court cases, they define what an independent institution is. An independent body is one which is outside of government, whose members' tenure are governed by appropriate appointment and removal procedures, which ensure its members are appropriately qualified and don't serve at the pleasure of the executive, and can be removed only on objective grounds relating to job performance. Is sufficiently well funded by Parliament to enable it to perform its functions, and is able to control its own functions. So there are a number of court cases. It is New National Party versus Government of South Africa, Independent Electoral Commission versus Langeburg Municipality, which dealt with the issue of what contains independence. Now, the fact is that, yes, broadcasting does need to be regulated, but not through the Films and Publications Board. I agree that there needs to be some mechanism. Maybe this committee can pass a resolution that the Communications Committee should deal with this matter. But it is not a function that should be assigned to the Films and Publications Board to regulate the content of broadcasting. And essentially, broadcasting means the content. And if somebody can say that this is not the content, then it is affecting the broadcasting. And if you look at it as the history of the provision, as a lot of the literature on this goes, it goes back to the apartheid era, where it was a government that controlled what was broadcast. And broadcast is such a powerful tool. It regulates social norms, etc. That's why there was a provision in the Constitution to have this independent regulator. That's why it's contained in Section 9, Chapter 9 of the Constitution.
Well,
there are a number of things that I like about it. I'd like to comment on this independence thing, first of all. There are a number of factors that have to be taken into account. ICASA's policy is determined by the Minister of Communications. It's determined by government. ICASA doesn't determine its own policy, number one. Number two, independence of the board is independence of decision-making. And examiners are not appointed by the minister. They are appointed from a panel nominated by the public. And the public makes the recommendations. Thirdly, the provision already exists in Section 26(4). That provides, in fact, that broadcasters cannot broadcast certain materials which have been classified by the Film and Publication Board, a provision which was never challenged, and in fact a provision with which the broadcasters are quite happy to comply with in consultation with the board. They had no problems with that at all. Fourthly, concurrent jurisdiction is not unconstitutional, depending on the circumstances and the reasons for concurrent jurisdiction. Where the board enjoys particular expertise insofar as classification is concerned, which ICASA doesn't, because ICASA says quite clearly, for one thing, the Independent Broadcasting Authority Act, which is supposed to, in Section 56, deal with what may and may not be broadcast, has been repealed by Section 97 of the ECA, of the Electronic Communications Act. And the Electronic Communications Act says quite clearly that any broadcaster who adheres to a code of conduct by a body recognized by ICASA is exempt from control by ICASA itself. So that in fact, it is BCCSA which has a say over broadcasters. But that is not classification. So the BCCSA only reacts after a complaint has been made, and the damage, whatever potential damage there was, has already been done. I'd like, if I may, just read, because I think this is a fairly important issue, and if we don't get it right, then the board's classification of X18 and X6 is without effect. Then we might as well not have any X6 or X18 classification. What is the point of classifying something as X18? If people can watch it on TV, I just don't see the point of that. It means, there's no reason for an X18 classification. Let's do away with X18 classification. If you give me permission, it won't take me long just to read a few of the important the proposed changes to Clause 27 of the bill suggested by the NCOP is, with great respect, ill-informed and will expose more children to the risk of harm from disturbing and inappropriate material. it will impact directly and adversely on one of the core objectives of the National Action Plan to Combat Child Pornography, which is to protect children from exposure to sexually explicit materials. It will also make a mockery of any restricted classification imposed by the board on the basis of sexual content. And it will also impact, again adversely, on measures to be introduced to regulate the distribution of sexually explicit material via mobile cellular phones and the Internet. Advancing information and communication technology is rapidly removing all constraints which prevent the delivery of the same services through different technologies and devices. Today, the same film may be enjoyed in a cinema, on DVD, on TV, on PlayStation such as the Xbox, and increasingly on mobile cellular phones. Any discrimination in the regulation of the distribution of films via different technologies, therefore, will impact negatively on the purpose and significance of the classification of films. The new array of media formats spawned by advancing information and communication technologies are challenging existing classification policies and guidelines for the establishment of a new model of content regulation that will apply to all media distribution formats in a technologically neutral fashion, which may involve concurrent jurisdiction or even co-regulation. The efforts of the board to protect children from the exposure to potentially disturbing and harmful material through classification, as is required by the Films and Publications Act, would be seriously compromised with the changes suggested by the NCOP. The Act sets out clearly and unambiguously material which may not be distributed or made easily accessible to children and which must be classified XX or X18. Films classified XX are completely prohibited from distribution, but not from possession. While a film classified X18 may only be distributed in accordance with the conditions set out in Section 24(2) of the Act, only by holders of a license to conduct the business of adult premises and only from within premises forming part of a building. Parliament's intention here is clear. The only sure way to ensure that such materials do not fall into the hands of children is through face-to-face distribution, which allows the distributor to check visually that the person receiving such product is an adult. The concerns expressed by me should not be interpreted as an accusation that broadcasters are deliberately broadcasting films which are potentially disturbing, harmful, or inappropriate for children, or that broadcasters will take advantage of any loopholes in the Act to broadcast such material. The fact is that the nature of broadcasting is such that it is difficult, if not impossible, to prevent children from watching everything that is broadcast on TV at any time. A cinema can and does, in fact, control admission to films to comply with any age restrictions imposed by the board. A DVD dealer can also control the distribution of films to ensure compliance with the conditions imposed by the board to protect children. Broadcasters, on the other hand, rely on an unreliable watershed system. In terms of the watershed system, films intended for adults are broadcast after a certain time at night, on the questionable assumption that all children are asleep at that time. Broadcasters can neither control the bedtimes of children nor who is watching what on TV at any time. Parental control over what children are allowed to watch is not only an ideal that is difficult to sustain in the light of advancing technology, when children may watch inappropriate material through sophisticated mobile cellular phones, but ignore the fact that not all children have parents, or have parents who can in fact control their children's viewing habits, as the board's research confirms. Any measure to protect children from exposure to potentially disturbing, harmful, and inappropriate materials must be appropriate to the technology used to distribute such materials. If the technology itself imposes constraints on regulations to prevent easy access by children, then it makes sense to regulate the content and not the technology. If one cannot control who watches what on TV, then it must make sense to regulate what may be broadcast on TV on the basis of the principle that we should attempt to make the lives of all children better without making the lives of adults worse. As far as I am concerned, carelessness with films that contain violent and sexual imagery should be regarded as emotional maltreatment of children. The lack of a system of prior restraint by classification based on appropriate guidelines amounts to carelessness. I could go on, Chair, but the problem we face is quite simple. If XX and X18 are allowed to be broadcast on TV, then it does not make sense to have those classifications, because there are more people watching TV than cinemas or DVDs. And the whole purpose of that is that excess contains elements which are traumatizing for children: bestiality, incest, extreme violence, extreme sexual violence. And although I'm not saying that broadcasters will show that, but it means that there is nothing in the law to prevent broadcasters from broadcasting that material. Secondly, we believe, in fact, that criminal law applies to everybody. The PFMA applies to ICASA. ICASA is not exempt from the PFMA. The ICASA is not exempt from traffic regulations, that, you know, if an ICASA driver is on the road, you can't say that, you know, traffic 120 speed limit doesn't apply to me. Criminal law cannot be selective. It must apply to all. No person can be exempt from criminal law. If we make it an offense for Sterkiniko to broadcast or to screen materials that are inappropriate and damaging to children, then how do we allow ETV to broadcast that? What arguments can we use to regulate mobile cellular phones, because that's becoming the most popular form of distribution of pornographic material. And our research has shown, in fact, that more than half of the number of learners surveyed admitted to having watched a pornographic film with only slightly less than half regularly. So coming into contact with pornography seems to be common among South African children in many instances, especially via television. And this is an unwelcome experience causing feelings of discomfort among children. That is the finding of the research that the board conducted in November 2006 among schools in Durban, Johannesburg, and Cape Town. We get far more complaints at the board about pornography on television than on films. We get far more complaints from parents, far more concern expressed. In fact, they've questioned us on a number of times, why do we allow X-18 movies to be broadcast on television. So it means, in fact, there is no effect to an X-18 or XX classification. It will be of no force and effect because it can be shown on TV. And if I'm Sterkiniko, I'll simply put a TV in there and they broadcast those, not via my projector, but I'll switch on the TV.
Clarity, because I've lost. Mr. Chetty says the exemption should be included. Section 24, 8, 2, and 3 should be included. The department says it should be included. The state law advisor says it should be included. We say it should be included. I don't think we should enter a long debate about this. But I want to, because we are now engaged, we had a lot of debate about this. Let's just remember the history of this.
When we went back, our original formulation was to classify everything that a broadcaster showed. We then backtracked on that. And we said, okay, ICASA, we appreciate your independence, but just as the newspapers had an exemption, total exemption, they could not print child pornography. The Voice, remember, it's a criminal sanction. They are subject to that, although they had a full exemption. Here the broadcasters are independent as far as ICASA is concerned, but they cannot broadcast something that is classified. And it's a straightforward issue. And we could spend all afternoon going around and around in a circle again. But for me, it's very clear. That exemption must remain. And if there's an argument that it might be unconstitutional, the law of practice has already been shown. No one has tested it yet. If they want to test it, let them test it. But there's an overwhelming public outcry about the nature of films that are being shown early by ETV and MNET. And I think that we need to take a very strong stance on this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, what I'm not arguing against is that broadcasters need to be regulated. It's by who they need to be regulated. That's the only issue. I just want to say there are a number of things that were raised. For example, to say that ICASA is not independent and that they don't take those decisions. Let me just go. Okay, I mentioned what Section 192 of the Constitution says, that there must be this independent regulator to regulate broadcasting. Then if you look at Section 2 of the ICASA Act, it says the object is to establish an independent authority to regulate broadcasting in the public interest. Then Section 3.3 says ICASA is independent, subject only to the Constitution and their law, and they must be impartial and must perform its functions without fear, favor, or prejudice. Then Section 3.4 says ICASA must function without political or commercial interference. If you go to Section 5, it says that the councillors are appointed by the minister upon written approval by the National Assembly. Members may be removed from office only on the grounds of misconduct, inability to perform their duties efficiently, being absent from 3 consecutive meetings without permission or good ground. Councillors may be removed only on the grounds of finding to that effect by the National Assembly. These are all the criteria that regulate what independence is. And that is the issue. It's not that broadcasters are exempt from criminal prosecutions. No. It is that broadcasters must be their content must be regulated only by an independent body. So, check and I finish?
Well, you know, come on, listen to me,
thank
you. That's the reason that we are here today. I know
you've got a lot of time.
No, but carry on, Baba. You are protected.
Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
So I'm not saying that these things cannot happen. Currently, they're actually not happening. And where they need to be regulated is ICASA needs to have a mechanism to deal with this, not the Films and Publications Board, because of its independence. We have actually lost all these cases in the Constitutional Court, which include Van Rooyen and others, New National Party versus Government of South Africa.
But one for months.
They challenged the independence of the Electoral Commission, and we lost that case.
Who lost the case?
The government lost the case.
Why? Because in
those circumstances, the court said independence means both financial and administrative independence. Now, if you look at the composition of the Films and Publications Board, they're appointed by the minister, they may be removed by the minister, they're financially controlled. So those are all the issues that are going to be raised
if on the independence.
On the independence.
But didn't we say that...
Section 3 of the Act is quite clear that the board must act independently and impartially as well.
Secondly,
ICASA is also funded by government.
These are the grounds that bodies that were far more independent, like the Independent Electoral Commission, have been judged to be not constitutional. And we had to come back and rework those acts.
Well, you said that if these bodies
Section 192 says there must be an independent regulator to regulate broadcasting in the public interest. So it means one regulator
dealing with the content.
Dealing with the content of broadcast. Because let's leave out the sexual conduct. I know that's a very emotive issue now. But look at for example, we have classification that may be refused, in that it's classification that can be incitement of hatred, etc. Now imagine it is a situation from further north, you know, and you can say if somebody has a complaint, oh no, this is creating tension in our country, you know, then you can refuse it, and it will be refused, the content will be refused by a body which is not independent.
But the ICASA is not responding to this call, that this problem that Swap spoke about and what you're trying to resolve.
That is a separate issue, Chair.
Now, can we look at the argument that you are putting in ICASA? There's only one good definition. You simply say that if you need to have a good definition,
No, that was the provision put in due to our history of a state-controlled media and the influences. So that was what the Constituent Assembly agreed to would be...
But these rights are absolute.
Yeah, these rights are actually absolute. Because it's Section 192, it's not even subject to a limitation clause in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution. So that is the problem that you faced with, and we need to perhaps with the communications committee find some mechanism to find a way that ICASA regulates the content of broadcasting. My issue is not that I want these things to be shown on TV. It's just the issue is who regulates the content of broadcasting.
Don't go.
No, I'm not going personal. It's just
now we understand this thing.
I'm just trying to.
I believe that, first of all, it is an existing provision. If we withdraw this amendment, that broadcasters would remain subject to 26(4), but that is in the existing act. and they can't broadcast anything that's been classified XX. The amendment was introduced because we've changed 26 to 24. And that is why it if we need to limit or exclude classification based on incitement to hatred or propaganda for war, that's fine. The board is only concerned, and the complaints we received are only about sexually explicit materials. And if we need to do that, I'd be quite happy with that, because I'm really not so sure that broadcasting propaganda for war is going to have any effect anywhere. Nobody is going to go to war just because they saw it on ETV. But as far as sexually explicit materials are concerned, I
would. When you saw the Rwanda shooting, I mean, with your
yeah, well, that was not actually propaganda for war. It was an actual call for war. But Chairperson, I believe. I believe when the amendments were proposed, I had meetings with the deputy president of the Cape High Court and with Appeal Court Belinda van Heerden. And they agreed that, oh no, it will pass, you know, if it comes to the Constitutional Court, we'd be able to, just as the First Amendment could not prevent the Miller case, for instance, you know, or Ferber v. New York couldn't prevent it. Although we all know how liberal the First Amendment is in the American Constitution is interpreted. But the point is, it does not make any sense, and we are not regulating broadcasters. We are saying there are criminal offences which will apply to everybody.
Chairperson, yes, I just wanted to add to that. Basically, for me, if you're going to use Section 192, that's a matter of interpretation, because you have to look at what does broadcasting mean, because it says there has to be an independent body to regulate broadcasting. Does that include content? It's not necessarily for us to say that's a constitutional matter. They can interpret that in the way they wish to. The only thing that is being done here is we are interpreting 192 in the way that we want to interpret it. So we have to give an interpretation to what is broadcasting and what is regulating. And as Mr. Chetty is saying, we are not regulating. We are merely saying that we've already classified a certain form in terms of our act, and you are to abide to that decision that we've already made. So that's an offence. It's an offence provision.
Madam?
Yes, I do agree with that statement.
Huh?
No, on that one, as I was saying earlier, when Mr. Chetty says that he's prepared to defend it at the end of the day, it's actually the minister that gets to. But I think on this one I realise that there are problems, but this is one I think that I'd be prepared to advise to risk that challenge in the Constitutional Court. But it's one of those, I wouldn't put money on it.
What is the engagement with
the broadcasters?
But I think if the proposal is compromising our stand, then it can go to the Consumer Party Center there. If we lose that war, then it's fine. We are a good leader. We can make an amendment accordingly. Even if,
I am. Absolutely. I was invited. We are interacting with the ICASA, and they asked us to work with SABC. SABC invited me to one of their classification sessions, Chair, and I went there at 9 o'clock in the morning. And there were all the SABC programmers and their examiners and classifiers, and they all sat and looked at me and said, "What's going on? Well, we expect you to run the classification workshop, because we can't do it. We don't do classification. We have no idea at all about what classification is. And it's only the Film and Publication Authority, which legally has been established to make sure that there are classification guidelines. There's nothing in ICASA or ECA which talks about classification or classification guidelines.
As I said,
that provision has not been challenged by ICASA at all, 26-4, and they cooperate with us and they expect us to help. It is. I mean, the act is quite serious. It must function independently.
Right.
The fact that it is funded by government doesn't compromise its independence. In consultation with cabinet, by the minister. We have a three-tier structure. The amendment suggests a three-tier structure. There is a council, which would consist of people appointed like the SABC board. It would be like the SABC board. Then the Film and Publication Board
will
be.
We
are calling it the council, but it is in fact a board. But we didn't want to use the term board because we've branded Film and Publication Board already. So the Film and Publication Board will refer to the second layer, which is the management and administrative section. The management and administrators, that would be the Film and Publication Board.
What is the role of Parliament in the appointment of the city of the independent? What is the role of Parliament? Because you cannot say that the regulation deals with total authority appointment in one, at the same time it's of independence. The independence will derive the role of Parliament.
I think the appointment of the council is something that portfolio committee had suggested that should be an appointment by Parliament. Council. Because the Film and Publication Board is not a... I thought, Mr. Chair, that you had suggested that, in fact, that will be changed to make the appointment by Parliament. I thought you said that. But the Film and Publication Board itself.
Just in terms of all this judgment, the criteria for independence is clearly not met. If you want to take a risk and sexual conduct, and I'm saying this unofficially because my task is to aim to get legislation that is constitutional. If you want to take a risk, limit that to sexual conduct and take out the possible political nuances that could come in the regulation. That's less likely to be challenged. You know, what I was saying is that why I'm saying that this is it's very likely that it is unconstitutional. because it infringes some. If this is your glass and this is what you're regulating everything under here, nobody else can classify that and say you can't show that. Say we become a very conservative state and we say that we can't, say it was in the apartheid era and we wouldn't want to show black and white people kissing, we could classify that. You know, those are the things that a board which is not independent can do. If you just relate it to different circumstances than we are in now, they could say that is prohibited.
If this board is independent, then can classify.
It would still need to be regulated by ICASA, because there's a lot of literature on the ICASA issue. In fact, the ASMAL Commission even looked at the terms of reference of ICASA, and they said that the Act, ICASA Act itself, does not go far enough to meet the requirements of Section 192. Those are the possible challenges that you're going to have there, Jay.
No,
where you regulate, where you classify things, you regulate the content.
I'm sorry, I was thinking on something. Now, what rule do we sort of insist on our old position with regard to our recommendations and the new watch from Chetty? Or are we saying that we consider what the machine is putting before us? Because I'm just trying to get to the final watch for a position. What is the final position? I want someone just to say, well, this is what, how is it?
Okay, the final position is we reinsert the word subject to section 24A, 2 and 3, and we consider whether it is necessary to clarify section 24A as to limit it to apply only to sexual offences. We could leave it as it is. And as it is, which will make it a higher risk, maybe that's the way to go, or maybe we can put an option in, to draft an option as to only let it apply to sexual offences, sexual conduct.
No, the propaganda for war and all of that you have already defined in the bill, I'm not going to be sure. Or it's only, we only focus on sexual conduct and leave the rest of the things.
And that would make it less likely, as you said, to be challenged.
Yeah, less likely to be challenged, but not. I'm not saying it's constitutional.
Sure.
I think that's my function here to say that.
No,
I'm like.
I think it makes sense. Take us back to tighten a little bit.
Is it not?
Should be himself come at once.
Can I just make one comment? And that is, if we do that, then won't the same argument be applied to the press? Because we're dealing with the same issues. Whilst there's a stronger independence here, it's a constitutional body, but the press has got the press freedom as well. And we haven't granted the penalty clause for newspapers with the same limitation. So surely one's got to be consistent. And that's why I would suggest you just leave it as it is. Then you are consistent with the newspapers and you're consistent with the broadcasters. Those are the two main exemptions that came. If we now type the one, then the court will say, but why do you limit the one and not the other?
Oh, sorry.
Yes, we do understand the intention or the purpose of Section 192. And I want to put it on record that it is not the intention of this committee to contravene that section. What this bill does or this subsection does is not regulating ICASA or it's not regulating broadcasting risk subsection 3. It grants an exemption from them. They don't have to apply for classification of their billing, so they are exempted from that duty. Whereas other industries, they must do before they can show their films, they must apply test, they must register with the board, and also they must apply for classification. But that's not what this act does. So what I want to clarify is by putting or by inserting the word subject to Section 24A, 2 and 3, is it the one that Mr. Mukesh is having a problem with? Is it the words that he thinks they might render the subsection be challenged for its constitutionality? Is it those words? But those words is just the condition. It grants them an exemption, and it's in as much as they are granted that exemption. It doesn't necessarily mean that Section 24 is not applicable to them. Section 24A deals with the offences and penalties, and those should be applicable to everyone, including the broadcasters, if they do show their film which has already been classified as a refused classification or as XX, if they do show that film knowingly that it has been classified, then they should be convicted. And that one is different. I want to bring the differentiation between the Section 192. I don't think it is applicable in this instance. Yes, they are independent. Yes, they've got their law which is regulating them. But this bill is not taking that away from the ICASA. It doesn't do that. It doesn't say so. All what it does is, if you commit this, if you do this, in terms of the films and publication, if you show a movie that is classified as so and so, then you're guilty of an offense.
How does child pornography apply to broadcasters? And it's only banned under the Film and Publications Act. It's very different. That is why it didn't repeal any of the provisions on child pornography in the Film and Publications Act, because they are different.
I think
government look like fools by talking about banning kissing, which is a complete misreading of the Act. Because the word kissing does not appear in the Sexual Offences Act, and the mouth-to-mouth contact appears only in the definition of sexual violation. So the offence is sexual violation through mouth-to-mouth contact and not kissing. Nowhere in the offence provision is there reference to mouth-to-mouth contact. It is only in the definition of sexual violation.
I was indicating to my colleague here to say there is an exception which is provided in subsection 2, and I think Bongi mentioned that.
No, but the policy decision is yours. My only concern is that it does raise issues of constitutionality. I think members need to be careful when they raise those, because they don't take the forms and publications board to court. It shows that Parliament has disrespect for the values of the Constitution and a number of other issues. So we need to.
Chair, I object to that statement. We do not have any disobedience to the values of the Constitution. You've got a certain opinion, and I think you've argued it enough. We take the decision here. We take the risks. We've got just as many other lawyers that say there isn't a constitutional argument, and I think that you're overstepping the mark now.
Chair, if I can clarify, I was responding to the statement that said that we can just pass it and then we don't need to worry whether it's constitutional. That's the job of the Constitutional Court. That is what I responded to.
Some of the things that confusion becomes a stumbling block. There are a number of things that, that is why time and time you find that there's a review of your confusion time and time. It's because some of the things that, we are putting in confusion, it's very confusing to live at that time. And as you move forward and you progress a little bit, you find that certain things are sort of in stumbling block for the development of the mission. Parliament is run by people who not understand. We have put the provision for this in the first body. For anyone who has a problem with other guys, I think it's up there. And that's which is making it good. But how it gets into the process sometimes, this kind of a war between ourselves and the judges. They deep down, they understand what it is that they do.
I want to assure you that we're not being reckless.
and that's not our intention. We value your advice as to constitutionality. But at a certain stage, I've sat for 10 years in the Justice Committee, and we have a lot of bills that come before us, such as the bail legislation. And we were assured that that is totally unconstitutional. But as far as policy was concerned, the public said we had to tighten up the bail conditions. We as lawyers thought that it was worth the risk. We heard the constitutional arguments, but we said that we believe we've got an arguable case, and in fact the Constitutional Court upheld our legislation. So in any case, there is grey areas, and sometimes you've got to push the envelope. But I want to assure you, we're not ignoring the constitutionality issue. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. Just with regard to, well, not on a lighter note, but we just have to look at the wording of this new subsection 6, because if you look at the subsection 3, under section 23, it's the specific one that we're dealing now with. Let's look on page 4 of this document, Select Committee Amendment. It's line 1, 2, 3. In the third line of this new proposed subsection 6, it should read, of broadcasting, comma, be exempt from the duty to apply for classification of a film or game. A film should come before game if you look at the what we have. And so it's just a typo. We just need to, if we're going to change that or substitute.
No touch.
Thanks.
State law advisors, Chief.
Same thing. We'll follow the service. No touch.
That one, and then also the definition of sexual and domestic violence that we will attempt to.
I'm saying that what we'll then do is that this engagement today will form part of the deliberations that we, in fact, will have in the committee when the committee passes the bill. From the workshop, okay. The workshop, we understood, is within the work of the committee, right? But we'll have to have a formal committee meeting where we'll then receive, you know, all of this. The amendments, you know. In fact, you have sort of amended the NCOP, but we'll have to put them formally.
Can we not attend our meeting tomorrow to a formal meeting?
My problem with that is the attendance and the notices again. That, you know, there's a particular parliamentary rule that, you know, allows you to, you know, do things. People said we have lived us outside, we do not know that, you know, we sort of. So the only time that we have is what? Friday. It's Friday. That's the only time that we have. And my problem is that we have. This is very. Are we finished? Yeah. Let us just finish the last one. Eh? And then let's come back to that particular engagement. Yes, Dion, can we just finalize which one? Just 29.
Chairperson, just with regard to those specific penalties, I would just like want to make a suggestion here that we say, and I think Mukesh can also assist here. It's got to do with the capping. Actually, it says here the period not exceeding 10 years. So we're actually telling the court you may not impose a fine or imprisonment for a period exceeding 10 years. And let's leave that to the discretion of the court. However, I do not agree that we should omit the word and liable upon conviction to a fine or that whole treaty. What should only be deleted is that for a period not exceeding 10 years. So I shouldn't agree that offence and liable upon conviction to a fine or imprisonment or both fine and such imprisonment. And I don't know if we want to include the words as, you know, by the courts. I know usually in legislation, and I've spoken to the state law advisor as well, you usually say that for a period not exceeding some or both such fines. But the courts determine there is the fines, etc., and they can also determine what a suitable imprisonment period would be, most probably. Now, if we say 10 years, it means they cannot go beyond that. And it was something that was raised by the law advisors from Parliament, with which we then at the end of the day agreed in the portfolio up in the National Council of Provinces. But my view is that we should just retain certain of the words and not delete everything.
Yes, the one issue was the issue of capping. If you look at the Sexual Offences Act, there's a whole part 2 of chapter 3 that deals in detail with the matters relating to sexual exploitation as well as the sexual grooming of children. And this act, the provisions as they currently are, narrow the impact of this. But also, if you're looking at clause 24b3, it says any person who has control over any film, game or publication which contains depictions, descriptions or scenes of sexual conduct and who fails to take reasonable steps to prevent access to such materials by persons under the age of 18 shall be guilty of an offence. Now, essentially, and liable up to a period of 5 years. Now, this provision is a very loose provision. It means that people that teach sex education can be charged for showing things like that. It means that, because again of
but
the wide...
But they've been exempted earlier.
No, but it just means that if I, for example, buy a Cosmopolitan, or if I buy a men's health magazine that contains, because of the wideness of sexual conduct, and I leave that on my bedside table, and my 16-year-old is caught reading it, I could go to jail for 5 years.
Yes.
Whereas the same child can actually buy the magazine in a bookstore without being charged. It's just an absurdity there. There's no mens rea behind that. There's no, and the Sexual Offences Act specifically deal with grooming and prevention of adult publications. The issues are fully covered in the Sexual Offences Act. It's just a bit wide and is going to make risk ordinary people becoming criminals unintentionally.
Yes, Chairperson, with regard to the remark made now, if you look on page 4, paragraph 3, it says that to omit subsections 3, 4 and 5, and these are the specific subsections dealing with what Mukesh is now raising, and we agreed to delete that. If we can live with that, it's not a problem. I was just basically addressing the issues of the question of unliable upon conviction and the capping of the period that we take that up. If you don't have the capping, are there specific provisions which give you 3 months or 5 years? Because normally you link it to a fine. The years normally give an indication of the fine, and the inflation then is not relevant, as opposed to say 10,000 rand or 3 years. You say 3 years because that will link to a monetary amount. If a court says, well, what is the monetary amount? I want to impose a fine, and there isn't a 10-year maximum, then 10 years or up to 100,000, is that a...
You're talking about the appropriation of fines. See, what they did with... Because regional courts can impose a prison sentence of up to 15 years, a regional court and a high court has unlimited discretion. If the court would come to the conclusion that, yes, you should get 15 years or the fine, they would make that appro- they, base it on this, they can still, within that discretion, they could do that. But what it's saying here is that you cannot go to jail for more than that. So you're actually limiting a court's discretion to give you a higher sentence. And that could be a problem. That is a problem, actually.
We've agreed that, you know, we can take out the capping, but the capping there is not simply there to cap, but it also sends a message that, look, you know, these are serious offences, and we're saying it can go up to 10 years. So having that 10 years, because at the moment there are a lot of disquiet in Australia and the UK and South Africa about the leniency of the sentences in child pornography. And I thought putting 10 there was intended not more to cap, but to remind the court that, look, you know, you can go up to 10 years for this.
Even if you set this at 30 years, a court can still just give you 2 months. So it's not a minimum sentence. We're saying remove the maximum sentence. Remove the maximum. How it is done in the Sexual Offences Act, they remove the capping to show that, and they actually increase the jurisdiction of the courts to impose higher sentences.
How do you say that? By removing the capping?
It means that you're imposing a maximum sentence. It means that a court cannot sentence you above that. I discussed this with the justice people and
yes, justice men. Yes, yeah. Justice men. Justice men.
Would be much happier if it's left as it is.
See, there's also another issue then, if you're going to leave that. This act is going to abrogate provisions of the Sexual Offences Act. This is a later act, which means it supersedes the provisions in the Child Care Act, and you're limiting the sections there. But they have even more. They can impose 50 years. So you're reducing the effect of the Sexual Offences Act, which I think is an unwanted issue, because they clearly dealt with there. So what I'm suggesting is that don't interfere with the seriousness that they gave that.
I really don't agree with that, because the offences are different between the Sexual Offences Act and the Film Publications Act. In fact, Mr. Chair, the NPA itself, in the last workshop that we had with prosecutors and police in Pretoria, drew the difference between the Sexual Offences Act, child pornography provisions, and the provisions of the Film Publications Act. They are different.
Thank you.
I'm just thinking, if it's going to, if you are going to have to compare the deterrent effect to putting a maximum sentence, I would rather go with leaving that offence open to give the court that jurisdiction, because he can, the court can even decide to give a 15-year sentence, and then it would be better than just having it stand there as a nicety. Well, not a nicety, but as a deterrent. So if I had to choose between having it there just for the fact of a deterrent and taking it away in order to be aligned with other legislation, then I'd rather take it away and leave it open to the court, because then they can impose whichever sentence they want.
Well, on this, yeah, but I said there are two effects to it. One is capping, but the other effect is to draw attention to that 10 years. It's a serious offense. If I say your car is worth 10 rand, your value of the car is very different if I say, well, your car is worth up to 50 rand, although it might be worth 5 rand. But if I say your car is worth 5 rand, it's very different to saying your car is worth up to 50 rand. I have very strong opinions, some of which I disagree myself. But
Chairperson, can I try a non-legal argument that occurs to me? If somebody is involved in this kind of behaviour, it strikes me that they're sick. They're not going to be looking to see how serious a court or a parliament views it. Look, oh, I could get 10 years. They're going to indulge in this sort of behavior despite anything, whether it's 50 years, whatever.
Maybe a last comment.
So maybe, you know, while I hear what Mr. Chitty's saying, at the end of the day, the legal people, or we might say, oh, yeah, it's very important, it's 10 years or 20 years. The people that are actually going to be up before the courts, I would assume, are not going to be looking at legislation or worrying about what the consequences are, because they're involved in that behavior for other reasons.
Yeah, I think what could be worse than a horrific rape in terms of the sexual offences bill, and there we don't have maximum sentences. I think we need to be consistent to allow this, and I think we need to take the capping out, because whilst pornography is bad, child pornography, but a horrific rape is just is 100 times worse, and there's no capping there, there's no deterrent set out there to allow courts to give a maximum sentence. So I think in light of that, and the strong argument that we can't impose something that goes against an earlier bill, we need to remove the capping.
No, but I think I think we'll sort of come to, but we'll sort of tomorrow. We'll sleep over this point, we'll take it to the extent. We'll sleep over it tomorrow, we'll sort of start with it. And then we need to analyze it.
Okay, and then today we had this workshop, and tomorrow the workshop is continuing, and then we schedule that the 1st of August, and then we'll finalize the bill. So if we are still on schedule. And then the refugee amendment bill, there was two amendments from the NCOP, so they are not debated in the NCOP, so we are scheduled to consider their proposed amendment by the 26th of August. And then also there is going to be an indaba on xenophobia, which the Minister of Home Affairs invited the committee some time ago. So there's an invite somewhere wherein it will be on the 18th and 19th of August 2008. And when I presented the program to the committee section yesterday, they wanted me to take it out because they wanted only us to deal with legislation, so that no, because from now until the 15th is constituency period. So, but we'll have to apply for the political approval for the xenophobia workshop.
And the report, where the report? the report of the committee was, you don't know about what's happening with the report of the committee, the report, the...
Okay, the xenophobia seminar that we had, we were busy completing with Adam.
They were the records of the minutes of the committee meeting.
I didn't bring them today.
So I'm saying, where do we put them in the program? Because we still have to finish the meeting. That's what I'm saying. That it seems now someone is now deciding as to this is how committees will do their work in terms of problem.
So,
now, why can't we agree that tomorrow we revisit the committee problem? Revisit, because there are still a number of things. One of the things that I think we'll have to talk to Parliament, the current developments around the refugee issue in the whole thing, I think the very serious call for concern that it makes sense to the committee. We'll have to have a way to do it. How does the committee come to it? In trying to help the department with the current challenges. It's quite a very serious thing, but the committee is required on the issue. But I think we can tell them. And we still have the GPW. We said to them that we have not adopted the annual report. We said we want the annual report. Unless it was all those things were in the program, but how it has been changed, I don't know. We'll have to explain tomorrow.
Because we now are adding to amendments, with this legislation wants to go back to the House, as opposed to us just projecting it, so we would have to do that. And then secondly, with my justice cap on, the floor costing legislation has been dealt with in the Justice Committee, and the feeling was that Home Affairs should also be invited to participate if they wanted to, and the chairperson was going to contact you, and I understand he was trying to get hold of you, because of impact from the electoral system, from a constitutional amendment perspective. As a matter of courtesy, just to mention that it was raised that Home Affairs should be there when we got the briefing. So I think the chairperson is going to contact you in that regard.
So now we will then do it tomorrow, and then we'll then look at what we should start today, and sort of finalize and sort of manage to manage which is not on that note, then we have to do it tomorrow at 10 o'clock, and then we'll do one. Okay. Thank you.